when you don't feel like you have a direction, you're kind of just a leaf on the wind. Like, I just knew, I kind of gotten over the stuff my dad was going through, and it's like, I gotta start my own business one day.
Okay, Garrett Moss, welcome to Pressure Tested. How does it feel to be the very first male guest on Pressure Tested?
That's a lot of pressure.
Well, I'm excited you're here. I'm excited you agreed to sit down and talk about just the whole story of Moss Utilities. I talk about you a lot on the podcast, and I'll just say things like, yeah, Garrett does that, or Garrett does this. And so finally, one day, Dave was like, hey, Kelly, you're going to have to explain that Garrett Moss is the owner, that he's your boss, that he's not just like your buddy. I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that.
I am your buddy.
Yeah, you are my buddy. That's true. Okay, I want to start kind of from the beginning with you. I think a lot of people don't know that your dad was in the industry or that you're multi-generation in the industry. So just tell us the whole story.
Yeah, dad, his dad. So I'm fifth generation to be in it. All the way back to the early 1900s, multiple generations, I worked for a company that's still around called Cullum Construction. Mm. Back when they were still, plows to like backfill and stuff. Like,
what?
Yeah, goes back a long time.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, a lot of family history. So my dad graduated high school in Plano, and then he went right into the field, started working for his dad at Cullum. And my grandpa Ted was like a general superintendent over there through the 80s, and then he got laid off in 87 in the recession that happened then when I was born. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Lots of family history. And my dad left where he was at in 1989 and started his own business pouring manholes. So he started pouring manholes for other utility contractors and eventually started doing pipe. My uncle Mark joined him a little bit later. And then they brought Ted over, their dad, and they were really successful in like the 90s and early 2000s, and had a really great, I just grew up around the business. Like, the Moss Construction was where we went and hung out at their office in Wiley. They had a big yard over there, and drove four-wheelers around the office, and jumped four-wheelers over piles of gravel, and like just hung out at work when we weren't in school. So just grew up around the business, and really just enjoyed the people that were in the business. I mean, they had some characters that worked for them. I mean, this was old school, like just a lot of fun, back when business was done a lot differently. A lot of, going to party at lunch and take the rest of the day and go hang out. And business was done with a handshake. And
sounds fun.
Relationships mattered more than anything. And, my family had my dad, my grandpa, they all had a reputation for being really trustworthy and honest. And you could have a handshake deal with them and it was going to get honored. So it was just really cool to see and really cool to watch kind of my dad be everybody's hero. And he was just really well respected, and he would give people a lot. He would really take care of people, and he loved helping people, and loved there's countless stories of people, stuff he did for people, and a lot of it I still hear to this day. I run into people that knew him and hear tons of stories about, man, your dad did this for me, your dad was so great. So that's really cool to kind of continue that legacy. So and then, in the mid-2000s, they started to struggle a little bit. There was some personal stuff. There was business stuff. And then 08 happened, and you kind of combine everything, and they had to shut their doors. So I was in the middle of college at the University of Texas and didn't know what I wanted to do. I kind of thought that I would just get handed the family business. That was always – my dad wanted me to go to college. And my mom, that's what they – you have to go to college. You have to get an education, because they weren't educated. And so I thought, hey, I'll just go to college, I'll get a degree, and then I'll come back and work at the family business. And, 08 happened, and I was in the middle of kind of partying fraternity life at UT, and went from all my stuff being paid for to racking up student loan debt, and kind of learning the hard way. So, which was a blessing in hindsight, right? Like, I was a real kind of spoiled kid and kind of had everything handed to me, and then all of a sudden it's all taken away and you get forced to go earn it. So kind of was really lost at UT, like had a bad problem with alcohol, partied way too much, wasn't focused on class, barely graduated. Took me almost really 7 years to kind of finish my degree. Barely had enough, just kind of moved majors a lot. Didn't really know what I wanted to do.
You did? So you weren't always an economics major?
No, that's what I ended up with. But I started off in civil engineering. I went to UTD for a semester, actually, and did business there. But then I transferred to UT. I chased a girl down there. But UT ended up being great because I got out of the house. I got to, you know, have my first apartment and be on my own and learn what real life looks like, right? That's a lot of what college is, I think, is just kind of figuring out who you are and what you don't want to do and kind of what's important to you. I don't know if the actual classes and stuff are going to matter much then or if they're going to matter in the future. You know, this college is going to change a lot. But so got done with that. And then, you know, I kind of was upset watching everything my dad went through, right? Like, he lost everything. We had a ranch. We had a beautiful house. He lost it all. And watching kind of the downside of entrepreneurship, where the depression, the anxiety, the you know, substance abuse, like everything, just it's hard. And watching, you know, you watch family go through that, and you're like, man, I don't want to sign up for that. So yeah. There was a brief period there where I was like, I'm just going to get a degree and get a job and figure it out. So I finally graduated in May of 2012. Couldn't find a job. I mean, the market was still terrible. I probably did, I don't know, 30 or 40 interviews all over the place, from sales jobs to a utilities contractor in Austin to, oh God, there was tons of them. But just none of them were a good fit. I was terrible at interviewing. I didn't really, you know.
Why were you terrible at interviewing?
I don't know, real nervous, real like, and probably a lack of like knowing what I wanted to do, like yeah. some kind of direction. I think people can sense that. They're like, sure. Yeah, has no clue.
Yeah.
Watched a lot of my friends still be able to get jobs, and it was super frustrating, you know, because I was a smart student. I just didn't apply myself. So, and I don't know, when you don't feel like you have a direction, you're kind of just a leaf on the wind. Like, life's just kind of, you just get lost.
Taking you on. Yeah.
So I decided to move back up to Dallas, and I ended up interviewing with a company called Brinkman. They're mm-hmm. like a big barbecue grill manufacturing company. They're not in business anymore, but, first job working in their customer service, like on a call center, and for $12 an hour, like answering angry people why their barbecue grill made in China doesn't work very well. Like,
I love that we're both starting in the call center. That's funny to me. It's yeah. wild.
So, you know, but I kind of somehow developed a work ethic then. In like the first 3 or 4 months, I was like leading the call center. I was leading in calls. Mm-hmm. I was leading in all the metrics, you know, sales and sure. everything. And they eventually promoted me to a different role. And the company culture there was just really, really terrible. Like, you know, I can say that because they're not in business anymore, but I'm not going to hurt any feelings, but real, really bad. And you could feel it. So one day I just didn't show up, which is probably not a good way to
Well, how old leave were a job. You? 24, 25?
Yeah, 24, 25. So I got a job through a friend, introduced me to the Crawford family. I got a job at Crawford Services and air conditioning. Didn't know anything about air conditioning, but that ended up being a pretty cool job. And that's where I ended up meeting you and Gray and kind of started all that. And then while I was working at Crawford, I mean, I liked that job. It was a lot of fun. I was designing custom home HVAC for mansions all over Dallas. Like, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Learned a lot. And I got a call from a recruiter one day he had like an assistant project manager role at a competitor of ours. And he was like, hey, do you want to get back into utilities? And I don't know, something told me that, like, I always kind of wanted to start my own business. I just knew, I kind of gotten over the stuff my dad was going through. And it's like, I got to figure out how to start my own business one day. And I thought, okay, it'd probably be a little easier in utilities than it would be in HVAC, because I have at least some family history, some kind of back, I have some connections, which didn't really help that much. But in my mind, we're like, that'd make it a little easier, right?
Right.
And then I thought, the you know, being the fifth generation to continue the family name, that'd be kind of cool. So took that job, working at another utilities contractor, and worked over there for about a year, year and a half, and then moved somewhere else for a couple of years. And when I was 29, I think I just turned 29, we decided to start Moss Utilities. And I only had a couple of years experience. And looking back, that was real dumb. Like, it was.
What do you mean?
Me say that?
It wasn't dumb. No. I mean, look at you. Like, you built a huge business.
I mean, I'd had no experience. I was a project manager. I knew how to, like, PM a job, but yeah. I didn't know anything about the business. So I think just being naive enough to like
go for it.
Sure, I can figure this out. And I found somebody else dumb enough to come with me, you know, Case. And he was a superintendent. I was like, well, he knows how to put the pipe in. I know yeah. how to PM it. Like, we'll figure the rest out. And so my grandparents, they had an open home equity line of credit on their house that they hadn't used. And so they gave me $60,000 off that, which in hindsight, I shouldn't have taken. Like, I shouldn't have. Later on, that became a real, like, that really bothered me that I mm-hmm. risked their paid off house, you know, like that really ate at me later until I got them paid back. But I found a bank that got us an SBA loan, $120,000 SBA loan with Brandon. He took a chance on me. I think I found him on LinkedIn, actually, when I first got on LinkedIn. And, you know, we just got going. And then we eventually kind of grew too fast for them. They were like, hey, you're growing too fast. And I didn't listen. And we found another bank that would kind of grow with us. And but I remember I still have my first projections to him. They were, the first 3 years were $4 million, $6 million, and $8 million in revenue.
And so what did you actually do?
So, you know, we started late 16. I don't really count 16. But 17, I think we did like $22 million. So... And then 28, 38 million. So like really just started shotgunning work and hiring people left and right and growing and like thinking we were doing great. And then one day we were like, uh-oh.
The day that you learned how to run the whip?
Yeah. So about, we were in our first office was my upstairs bedroom. And then eventually we got a little office over in Carrollton. I don't think you ever went over to the office.
No.
It was, I don't know, 1,000 square feet with a little warehouse in the back. And something told me, you know, my uncle was working for us. He was doing like the QuickBooks and stuff and trying to help. And I was like, we don't know what we're doing when it comes to finance. And
wait, John's dad was doing the books?
Yep.
Oh, man.
So, and he was helping us. You know, we were just trying to figure it out. And I called one of the smartest guys I knew at the time. He was a director at Brinkman with me named Rich Fleissner. Mm-hmm. And Rich was like super smart guy. And somehow... He was kind of winding down Brinkman's operations, and he didn't really have anything going on. And I was like, hey, do you want to come be our CFO? And he was like, what can you afford to pay me? And I paid him a lot more than I was like comfortable. I was like, what? Okay, I'll figure it out, I guess. So a lot of companies don't make that CFO hire until way later.
Oh, no.
I think that's one of the best things I did. But, you know, Rich over the next year or so got in there, and then one day was like, He was a manufacturing background, mm-hmm. like worked at paper mills, like big accounting audit company. So he was just super smart, but he didn't know construction. And then he started figuring out the WIP schedule and stuff that I didn't. And I was like, and then one day, I think this is in, I can't remember, maybe May of 18.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I remember.
He comes to me and he's like, hey, we just lost like $700,000 last month. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then we started diving in and all the rain and start, that was the second wettest year on record.
Mm-hmm.
So we did like we kind of had to have a big timeout and lay off people and kind of regroup. And that started to get really hard when we figured out we weren't, you know, you think you're doing great. You're buying trucks, you're hiring people, you're doing all this stuff and everything seems great. And like, and then you get a big financial surprise that like you're not doing great. And it's,
well, you guys didn't have, any clarity on the financials at that point. I mean, I think you guys started out of QuickBooks, and then Rich made a really great decision to get into Spectrum, get into a construction software. And then a few months later, you know, when you were actually able to look at the WIP and look at percentage completion accounting, you were finally shown the real truth, which I think is so, you know, that's really impactful to construction businesses. Like when we see financials of other construction businesses that are in QuickBooks, I'm like, what do they not know about their business?
You can't keep a WIP schedule on QuickBooks. Mm-mm. It's all,
no.
You basically have your revenue from the job and your total cost. Like,
right.
There's no, so you don't know how far you are along the job you are and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you don't know how you're doing at all.
Right.
So that's one of those things that like I wish I would have known before I started a business. Is like how the balance sheet works, how the income statement ties to the, how everything ties together with the WIP schedule. Like if I could give any advice to people that want to start their own construction business or business in general, mm-hmm. is you have to understand the finances of it. You have to, because if you don't know how you're gonna make money.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people just know how to put in the work and they just go for it, which is great. Good on them, but understanding that's important.
Yeah, and a lot of small businesses probably, you know, just kind of run the business out of their pocket where they're like, hey, do I have money in the account? Okay, I can spend it. And there's a lot more to it than that.
I think that it's funny with us, but I think you'd be surprised how many small businesses operate like that every single day. I mean, we look at HVAC companies, we've looked at other construction companies, and a lot of them are cash basis. I mean, they're truly just saying, hey, you know, is the P&L making money? Is there money in the checking account? And that's really it.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Okay, so it's April 2018. What happens next?
Well, we decided to downsize and kind of regroup, so... I think we laid off, I don't know, 30, 40 people out of 120, 130 at the time. So mm-hmm. big kind of regrouping. We hunkered down. We We start really just kind of trudging along. Our bank at the time starts freaking out. They start really hemming and hawing, and eventually they end up shutting off our line of credit. It was maxed out. They won't give us any more. They wouldn't grow with us anymore. We'd grown our credit line from like $350,000 to $2.5 million.
Wow.
So we had they did a great job of growing with us, but then like I think our relationship manager over there left, and it was like we didn't have any advocates, and it was just
got it.
So end of 18, we're out looking for other banks. I kid you not, we probably talked to 50 different banks. Nobody was interested in the business. Nobody wanted to help. We ended up getting a group out of Houston that was like a turnaround group that came, and our bank recommended them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they got us in with, and their answer was, oh, you should take this merchant cash advance loan. So at the end of 18, we took $1 million loan. And we had to pay them $40,000 a week. It ended up being $1.8 million. We paid them back in like 6 months or seven months. Like crazy, crazy amounts of interest.
And so, who's CFO at this time? Rich isn't.
No.
What's happened to Rich?
We brought in Matt. So, Rich, while he was working here, one day he started noticing some health challenges. And he started noticing he was losing power in one of his arms. Like he was just losing muscle mass and he couldn't figure it out. And he started to go to the doctor, and over the course of like 6 months, they kept ruling everything out. And then finally
6 months,
Rich comes to me and he's like, I'm pretty sure I have ALS. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, you're healthy as an ox. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, I think I have ALS. The doctor hasn't told me yet, but I think that's what it is. And then 3 or 4 months later, he was diagnosed with ALS. So he kept working for us as long as he could and wanted to stay active. And, he ended up passing a few years later, which was really sad. Rich was a great man. We wouldn't be here without him.
Right.
Really, one of the only people I consider like a real mentor. Like he was just an awesome, awesome guy. Great family man. Taught me a lot about life. So that was a hard loss. And, that was right during COVID when he passed. But, so we found Matt. Matt came along and really helped us improve our game. Matt was an experienced construction guy.
He was.
So Matt was still there and, taught you a lot. And, but we were still struggling. And I think we were still in a tough situation. We were still trying to get out of the hole. And that hole was deep. I mean, we were down big and it was 2 years. 18 and 19 were really hard. I mean, I think we kind of flatlined revenue in 18, 19, trying to just figure it out, trying to get better jobs. But our operations were still bad. Our people were, when you grow that fast, you're grabbing people and
whoever will come.
And you like somebody, but you don't know what you're really getting, right?
Right.
And you're trying to build this team so fast that you don't have time to slow down and like, is that the right person for the right seat? So you try people a lot and they cost you a lot of money, and then you find somebody else and they cost you a lot of money, and you're like, so. At the end of 19, it was bad. I mean, you remember it was, on in 18, right?
Yeah, I remember.
Middle 18.
So I managed projects for a couple of years, and then I eventually found my way back in the accounting department into 19.
Well, but you started at the front desk.
I did. I started at the front desk, and I actually
famous starting spot for a lot of people.
Yeah, I actually helped Rich with the whip. I remember that was one of the first things somebody tasked me with, was figuring out how we entered projected costs in a spectrum to create the whip, and that was one of the first things I did with Rich. And then we went through losing all those people. So I kind of had my pick of jobs at that point. And so I picked an AR role at that point. And then we realized, no, I needed to be managing projects. So I managed projects. But end of 2019, kind of internally, everyone's starting to sense that the company's going downhill. You start having major people leaving.
What do you think made up sense that? We couldn't pay our vendors.
We couldn't pay our vendors.
Payroll,
People were no longer just paying us money anymore. Everything had to be a two-party check.
Yeah.
So all of our vendors would have to come in and sign all of our checks. So the cash flow that we were receiving in from general contractors, none of it was our money to spend how we needed to. So things like payroll taxes, all of the things that require, all overhead expenses, those were getting kind of paid last. I mean, we always made payroll, But
somehow.
Somehow payroll always got paid. And
yeah, but
like, thank the Lord for that.
How many times do you think that you and I were like, I mean, legit on like a Wednesday being like, how do we make payroll Friday?
No, I remember 10? we would be calling people trying to figure out who was going to pay us and who was going to go pick up the check. But I mean, like, I remember coming in on Wednesday morning a few times being like, this is the week we're going
to
miss it.
I was telling Sean this morning, there was this one time where I had to drive out on a Friday to the city of Greenville to pick up a check because I think we just cut payroll Friday, but it was like we were playing the float game. And like, if I didn't go get that check on Friday and we put it in the bank, it wasn't going to clear for Monday and it was going to be bad. Like it got that tight.
Yeah.
And
I remember that.
How many of those times were, I mean, you know, God works in crazy ways, but like, you know, somebody paid us early or we were able to like convince somebody to raise some retainage early or something came through many times where we didn't miss a payroll. Actually, the only payroll, we missed one payroll. You know why?
Why?
You don't remember this?
Uh-uh.
Because I forgot to approve payroll.
Oh, Spectrum. I believe that.
So we didn't miss it.
That makes sense.
But Sarah had to frantically cut manual checks Friday morning.
Yeah, I remember that actually.
And everybody was freaking out. I was like, no, everybody guys, was like, yeah, we got the money. I was like, chill.
Yeah, that was a big deal. When people don't get paid on time or their gas card stops working, both of those things, people start freaking out.
Because with the gas card. If your paycheck starts bouncing, people are like, uh-oh.
Well, and vendors, you know, vendors made it really, you know.
Are there any vendors that didn't cut us off? I mean, we got cut off.
All vendors cut us off pretty much. I mean, some of them we still don't work with now because they just wouldn't help us at all. And we have some vendor relationships from that time that we focus on so much now because they were so helpful to us at that time.
Right.
But one of the things that I remember the most about that time, especially kind of hearing the story later, was, and this was like, this was nothing against Matt, and I always say that, but because honestly, had I been in Matt's shoes in December of 2019, I would have told you the exact same thing. But I remember him telling you not to have a Christmas party and not to give out bonuses, and but you did it anyway. And how did you do that?
And to file bankruptcy.
And to file bankruptcy. Yeah. But so what happened anyway? Because I remember having a great time at the Christmas party in December of 2019.
Yeah, I think even before that, maybe around Thanksgiving, one of the defining conversations I remember having is with Haley, my wife. We were at the kitchen table, and I was sort of bawling my eyes out, like, "Hey, I think I'm done. Like, we need to go do something else. This isn't working, and I want to, you know, somebody they're telling me I should file bankruptcy." And she was like, "No, like she's like you're gonna go down swinging. Like, I don't care if you fail, I don't care if you lose everything, but you're not gonna just give up." And that's you know, that's kind of who she is, right?
Yeah, for sure.
She's always been my rock and been by my side. So having her support, you know, I think having a good spouse is probably the most important decision you can make.
I completely agree. And she's always like, you know, Haley is like totally different than I'd say like you or me. But I will say that she really is. She's always just been a rock. Like, and she's not only will she be a rock and be the kind of person that's like, no, hell no, you're going to go, you're going to fight to the death on this one. But she'll also be the person in the back of the room when you're like giving a speech. And she does this for everybody that she loves. Like, she's the biggest woohoo girl. Like, she is going to support you. If you say something, I mean, if you say something stupid, she's going to be like, woohoo, you're doing great. Like, she's just like, she's a supporter. And so I agree. Like, there's a lot of times I've thought that you wouldn't have come as far as you had you not had to go home and been like, Haley just like kicking your ass a little bit, I mean, telling you got to go back and got to keep going.
And everything from even the first couple of years, I couldn't take a salary. Like, we needed to keep all the money in the business. So she was supporting our family. She was working really, you know, 12-hour days. She was a really talented hair colorist and did really well. And like, she was able to, you know, carry our family. And then once we had Harlan, our oldest kid, and then he had an incident where it was kind of a scare with him and a target where he stopped breathing. An ambulance had to get called. Like, that really freaked us out. She was like, I need to be home with the kids. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm taking a salary. And then she decided to stay home, and now we have five beautiful kids. So you know, she's our rock and our family. And if I didn't have her, I think you look at a lot of entrepreneurs that are successful, I think most of them have a great spouse.
I agree.
On their side, you know, it's kind of a requirement of the job, because you have to have somebody that understands the sacrifice, understands the time commitments, understands the mission, you know, understands what it takes sometimes when you go home and your mind is
somewhere else.
If you're not present or you're not, there's lots of challenges around that at home. And you just have to have somebody that's patient, willing to work with you, and you're a work in progress, right? And so she's been amazing. But that time was really hard, and she held it together. So all in the span of a couple of months, Well, we do have that Christmas party. Yep. And I think the story you like to tell, or you're talking about, is that I kind of had to max out my personal credit cards for that Christmas party.
To give people bonuses.
That, and, you know, just the Christmas party wasn't extravagant. I think we all just had dinner at Whiskey Cake or something. Like, it wasn't anything special, but.
Yes, it was the nicest Christmas party I'd ever been to at that point. And I worked for a very successful company that made a ton of money, and they weren't willing to invest in something like that. But you do it on the brink of bankruptcy with your own personal money, because it was that important to you for everybody to have a good time at that Christmas party. And because you were attempting to, you know, let people kind of sleep. Like, you wanted people to go into the holiday season knowing that, hey, your job's okay, we're okay, here we are having a good Christmas party, here you are getting your bonus.
Yeah, because with everything else going on, you cancel a Christmas party, I think people are like,
are you kidding me? Going into Christmas?
Yeah, we're done. Yeah, like, this is over, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think we gave out a lot of $500 gift cards. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't a ton, but I just think doing something, you know, you had to do something.
Gary, it was on your personal card. I don't know anybody on the planet that would have done that. That's why that story is so impactful, because literally I have met thousands of people in my life, and I don't know a single one of them that would have went out, because, you know, they would have said, okay, we're just not giving bonuses, or we're just not going to have the Christmas party, and, you know, I'll explain. But you felt such a responsibility to the people that worked for you. Like, that's not a common thing. Like, it's just not. So, well, like, thanks. I think that sometimes you don't give yourself enough credit for that. But, like, when you are, you know, when people matter to you, like, you become so responsible for their whole well-being, which I think is a lot of kind of where we're going with this story. Okay, sorry, we're in the weeds, but tell me, it's 2020.
We survived through Christmas, you know, January of 2020, general superintendent quits, CFO quits, no money in the bank, dim future.
Yeah.
You get thrown in. I think you're kind of doing all the billing and stuff, but you're like, I'll figure out how to do some of this stuff. And
yeah, Matt, you know, Matt.
Crash course of a 1 week.
Yeah, Matt, you know, and again, like, I love Matt. Matt's still a good personal friend of mine. But, you know, Matt just kind of saw the writing on the wall, and he had his own family to take care of.
Yeah, I don't blame him at all.
And the other, and, like, for sure, you know, Matt also recognized that, you know, you're what you are, who you are, and there's not a lot of telling you what you are and aren't going to do. And I think Matt recognized that maybe, hey, I don't know that he's necessarily hearing me on this, and I'm going to let him figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to be honest, the payroll tax was behind, which is, you know, if you own a business, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, gets paid first, right? But you were having to keep the business alive. And so I think he saw both of those things. I think he saw them as insurmountable. And he, you know, did what he had to do. And I don't blame him for that. But he was just kind of like, who do I show the bank rec to? And that was kind of what we got out of it. And so, yeah, I did take that on.
I don't
blame
him. You know, that was causing him a lot of stress.
No, he was so stressed. Yeah. He wasn't healthy. He
looking back, like, you know.
I don't blame anybody.
I put him in
anything.
a bad situation, and it's okay. But, you know, we end up. So during that time, we had refinanced that bad line of credit. Mm-hmm. And we had gotten a little bit less bad line of credit. But we had a group come in and give us a kind of an AR factoring line, but it wasn't really factoring. It was asset-based lending, they call it.
And
20% interest.
20% interest, yeah.
So you're sitting there, and it's you have a line of credit, but, like, you're paying so much interest. It was real – remember how tough it was to, like – every pay app, everything was so scrutinized. It was just – anyway, it was a lot of accounting
every
work.
Every time I sent out an email to get an update on status of payment, I had to copy the bank, because the bank wanted to know, one, that receivable was real, and two, that we were actually going to get paid on it.
Yep. Anyway, that was really tough. But it was a step in the right direction, I guess. But so you're sitting there, and if when you're making profit, you know, we were probably making a little bit, but everything went to paying interest. I mean, 20% interest on a $4.5 million line of credit. I mean, do the math. That's what, $1 million of interest a year, just racking up, right? So you just felt like you couldn't ever make any progress. But at the same time, you were learning. We brought in an interim CFO to help you.
Yep.
Kind of trained you, Rick. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things is Parker took over the field.
Yep.
And Parker stepped up and was like, I'll run the field. And he made some big culture changes and got us going in the right direction. And that took some time. And, you know, we hired other leaders in estimating, and we, like, started to figure out that we needed some better leaders. And, you know, we started to make some progress, and it felt like we were starting to dig out of that hole. And then COVID happened. And COVID kind of distracted us from, you know, some of the bad stuff. and got us focused on just surviving COVID, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're just focused on survival and trying to make it to the next day, you just take it one day and keep going.
Yeah.
And then we had that other investor guy. This whole time I'd been looking for a capital investor, right? Mm-hmm. I need a partner to infuse with some capital. We're looking for like $2 million of capital to put in the business to kind of strengthen the balance sheet, get some better debt. And this guy kept egging me along, kept just stringing me along for, I don't know, a year and a half, two mm-hmm. years, and never came through. And COVID happened and we got distracted and kind of forgot about him. And thank God, because everything else that happened with that. But, at one time we decided it was a smart idea to start an excavation business and we sold that to him. That was another dumb decision. Like, hey, we're struggling in utilities, but let's start doing dirt work too.
Yeah.
Makes real sense. So all this stuff's kind of going on and on, and you know, you're just kind of surviving month to month, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of times you think about like what I struggled with was when you're in such a big hole. Like if you focus on how big the hole is, you
never get
you
out.
You can spiral into like this, just wanting to give up mode, right? And you know, I was struggling with my weight. I was drinking a lot. I wasn't taking care of myself. I was, you know, struggling at home. Like everything was just a struggle. It was really hard. So.
So how do you think that, what do you kind of look back to at that time? I mean, because here we are, this is one of the most successful utility companies in DFW. What do you think just the turning point for you personally was? Like what changed in your mind that kind of got us from there to here?
I know what it is. In like middle of late 19, I stumbled across Andy Frisella and 75 Hard.
Mm.
And that's why I'm such a big advocate of that program.
Yeah.
Because doing 75 Hard got me going back in the right direction and like got me to focus on just winning one day at a time.
Mm.
I lost, you know, I've done it now four times, but each time I do it, I kind of learn something new. And that first time was the hardest, right? And I probably lost 40 pounds. You know, you don't drink for 75 days. You're focused on two workouts a day, like your time management skills improve, and you're just focused on like doing this program, and it just lets you win one day at a time and build momentum, and like getting better personally, even with like everything else was crumbling around me, and I was just focused on this program. It just gave me resilience and let me build up some mental toughness that I really needed, right?
Mm.
And then listening to the MFCEO project and kind of him talking about all the struggles of an entrepreneur, I was like, I'm going through that. Like I listened to MFCEO project every episode, probably two or three times through, like, you know, just, so that was really impactful. So working on myself, getting better, you know, then the business started to do better.
Right.
And it starts with me. So I've learned that to this day. Like if I have to be the best version of myself and take care of myself. And that's not selfish. That's like, I can't do anything else. I can't be a good dad. I can't be a good partner. I can't be a good husband. I can't be a good business leader if I'm not taking care of myself. And I'm not perfect at it. I still struggle with stuff. But, you know, I'm going in the right direction, and that's super important. But so once I started doing that, then the business started to get a little bit better, and it wasn't great. I mean, we just started to get better year over year, month over month,
mm-hmm.
you know, day over day. And
yep.
Got some good people in place, and 20 and 21 started to really turn the corner. And then, you know, 22, 23, 24 just started kind of a hockey stick growth and revenue and profitability. And just a big turning point that you know about is finding a great bank to support us that kind of came in.
Absolutely. Yeah. That happened. So what was that, 2020, 2021 that 21. We found? Okay. Yeah. Texas Security came in, and they were just amazing to us. Kind of, they helped us find, you know, they brought in that other capital that helped. You know, that's definitely one of the things when I look back on that was a really game changer for us, because we found a bank that, you know, we were truly not bankable. Nobody wanted to do business with us. But when we found Texas Security, they were the first bank to say, hey, we see you guys. We see what you're capable of. And we're gonna bet on your capability versus what you've accomplished so far. And when they did that, I think that kind of changed the game. Because every single year, they grew with us. Every year, we could go back to them and we could say, hey, here's what we're going through. How do we get to the next? And that's why, for the rest of my life, I'll always recommend Texas Security as the true entrepreneurial bank. Like, they're going to see, they're going to do deals that other banks aren't going to do. They just are, because they look at business a little differently, I think.
Well, I think they back the, you know, they back the people, not just the business, right?
That's right.
When you believe in people, you can do, I mean, how many times have we learned that? When you believe in people, you can do amazing things. Like, there's, yeah, a lot to be said, really, really good about them. They're great.
The other thing I think was really big for us, because it just gave us, or gave you an outlet to kind of get what you wanted for the company out, was traction. And I talk about traction on the podcast all the time, because a lot, you know, it's funny, but a lot of the guests that have come on Pressure Tested, they all do traction too. And they all just have amazing things to say about it. And some of them are more in it than we are, and some of them are less in it than we are. But I think that when we sat down and did traction, and we kind of had that first leadership team in the room, and you were like, okay, here's where I want to go, here's what I want to focus on, and here's what I think is possible. I think at that point, everybody started to be able to see the vision, which was really helpful.
And you had told me about traction way before that, and I kind of was a little stubborn about, yeah, we'll do it, we'll get to it, whatever. And then we finally, but I don't know if you remember, but 21, I think 21 may have been the hardest year of my life. Like, it was, I was really struggling in 21 as a leader. And I was watching my dad battle cancer. So in the span of a couple of months, my dad passes away. We have a kid, which is great. You know, like, a lot of stuff happens. And the leadership team at the time kind of sat me down and was like, dude, like, you need to step up your game as a leader. Like, that, you guys all called me out. And then that's when we kind of formed our new structure around traction. It was like, we had a VP of estimating. We had a VP of project management. We had you over the accounting. Parker, like, we've got some structure to us, and we implemented traction. And so that was really tough for me but having the team around me to, like, call me out and be like, hey, step up your game. Mm-hmm. You know, to this day, really, really helped me. And there was a couple of people at that time that kind of gave up on me, and, you know, good riddance. They left, but the team that was left was amazing, and, like, we started to take off and go the right direction. So when you have the right people in place, you can do amazing things. But the wrong people in the wrong spots, and it's chaos. So.
I agree. Yeah, that's really when we started to have the right people. I mean, and a lot of people that were in that original leadership room aren't necessarily here today, but I think each person kind of gets you to a certain point, and then then you get a little bit further with the next person because it's different, or because they believe in the mission more. There's all these different reasons, right? So, personal question: is 2021 the year you quit drinking, or was that later?
Yeah. Yep. December 26, 21, right after Christmas. So
you haven't drank since.
Nope.
That's insane. Like, I mean, I'm a drinker, so, like, I'm a social drinker. I like to go out, and it's like one of the things I've always been really impressed with is just the true discipline around not drinking, you know, because, like, we'll go to Vegas or we'll go out to dinner, and it's like everyone around you is drinking, and you just, like, you're so, like, you just, you're in it. And I've always thought that was really, like, how did you do that? To people who struggle with alcohol every day, like, how did you do that? How did you make that decision for yourself?
I don't know if I call it discipline anymore. It's just kind of my identity, right? Like, I just don't, you know, and I think, the first year was really tough, but I struggled with alcohol all the way back to, you know, it goes back a long time. Like, I didn't drink alcohol in high school because my family struggled with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad struggled with it. My uncles, my cousins, like, I have a long, my aunt, I have a long family history of struggling with alcohol. And I kind of, if you don't drink in high school and then you get down to UT in Austin and you join a fraternity, you know, you find girls and you discover alcohol, like, it's kind of a bad mix when you don't have any experience with it, right?
Right.
So, I think that's why I really struggled in college, was wanting to party and drink and, you know, have fun. And you kind of build this culture of, the more I drink, the more fun I am, the more fun you have. And eventually, you know, by my mid-20s, you kind of just get, like, that lifestyle just really sucked.
Yeah.
But I kept struggling with it until, what is that now? I don't know. They're coming up on 4 years. I mean, it's been a struggle. I would quit in my marriage. It would cause problems, and I would quit for 8 or 9 months and be like, okay, I've got this solved. I can try again. And every time I went back to it, try to just handle it socially, and I just never could handle it. And then it would always just snowball to, you know, back to kind of a problem. Right. So at some point, you just have to look at it and go, the positives don't outweigh the negatives. Like, the negatives are way big, and the positives are a little bit of fun, but not really, because I'm dealing with hangovers. I'm dealing with, you know, upset family. I'm dealing with not being a good dad, you know, losing time, not enjoying work, being tired. Like, there's just the health problems.
Just a ton of drawbacks.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Another interesting, like, if you look at a graph of my life, as far as quality, income, everything, like, the minute I quit drinking, it just goes.
Oop. Yeah. I know that.
I mean,
it's
insane. So
yeah.
I talk a lot about alcohol with, like, some of my friends that I see struggle with it. And I'm not trying to be the guy that's like, everybody needs AA and blah, 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 you know, but I'm open to talk. Some people, you know, it needs to be talked about, because I think society's seeing how bad it is for you. There's been lots of new studies, even like one or two a week. Like, it's not the old, hey, one or two a day is good for you. Like, the science on it is not, that's not it.
Yeah.
It's really bad for you.
I agree.
So, you know, 20 years from now, I think we'll treat alcohol like smoking. I think we'll look back and be like,
wow, that's an interesting idea. I agree, though, because I did read a study about how kids, like teenagers, were polled, and, you know, they, you know, now there's teenagers that haven't drank at all, while, you know, 10 years ago, there was a lot more of them that had drink. Like, there's all these studies showing that, like, drug use and drinking is down for Gen Z. So, you could be onto something there. It's interesting. I mean, but it's still such a part of life for a lot of people, though. You know, like, they even kind of plan their date. It's like happy hour, drinking at dinner. Like, it's just such a part of society and such a part of social gatherings.
Yeah, when I look back at life before I quit, it's like, how much is built around just doing stuff while you're drinking?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's insane. But I don't judge anybody for it or fault anybody. And I don't mind being around it now.
Yeah, doesn't bother
me. I don't like going out to a bar at 12 or 1 in the morning and, you know, having to deal with that, but I don't mind being around people drink. Like, it's fine, you know, as long as people can
maintain.
Yeah, but once you, your eyes just get open a little bit to it, and then I'll watch some friends struggle with it, and just, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm here if you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I can recognize when people are struggling with it now. So, and you know, at first I went to AA meetings and kind of went that process, and I don't know, I just didn't really feel like it was my spot. And then eventually I got, you know, I'd say about the 1 year mark, you start being like, okay, I'm not tempted at all. I don't miss it.
Really?
I don't miss it at
1 year mark?
Hmm. There's not a time where I'm like watching somebody else drink and I'm like, that looks really fun.
Good. Really?
It doesn't happen anymore.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I remember you through the first year that you did struggle with that. And that was something that you kind of had to deal with over and over.
Yeah, you get
again.
A little FOMO, a little guilt, or a little like, man, I wish I could, this kind of sucks. Why am I like this? Why do I struggle with it and other people don't?
Yeah.
You kind of get that. And then
that's fair. You know, last year, it's 2024, and just kind of talk to me about the year the business had in 2024. After you've been through all of the ups and downs, you know, you're looking at December financials for 2024. Just kind of tell me about the year that the company's had.
2024 was amazing. It surpassed all of my expectations. I mean, you go back to 22, 23, we started being able to really ramp up growth again. Like, we had the right people in the right seats. We were able to hire people. We started building a kind of a younger talent. We moved offices, you know, we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And we developed a really great reputation for some of these bigger commercial projects, and really worked on relationships with our clients, and, you know, just started to take off. So revenue, profit were way ahead in 24 of everything we've ever seen, you know, that I didn't think was possible. So kind of timed out really well. And about a year ago, we started talking about, you know, doing an ESOP, or I started contemplating, like, hey, what's the future look like, right? And tough part about a business like construction personally is that, you know, it's hard to ever really take personal money out, because you're always focused on building the balance sheet, and, like, you have to have balance sheet strength for sureties and banks and you know, there's not really a way to diversify your income. And so there's a lot of risk in it, right?
Like, right.
You know, I'm personally guaranteed on everything. I have all my chips are in the middle, no matter what.
Yeah.
And you just go through life, like, everything you've built could go away in an instant. And I watched that happen to my dad. He was personally guaranteed on everything. And he would sell off his personal assets and pour them back into the business when it was struggling. And people don't understand the level of risk there is, right? Like, and everything could be gone in relatively quickly. Some macroeconomic thing happens, some recession, some, so you got to be prepared for that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you start thinking about do you sell a business? How do you grow? What's the future? And I'm, you know, a lot of people are like, Garrett, you're still really young. Yep. Like I got plenty of roadway in front of me, but I think it's important to be thinking about that ahead of time. And a lot of, I think one of the other best things I did, we glossed over, was join a YPO in January 2020.
Yes, I remember that.
YPO has been one of the most impactful things I've ever done. So I joined in January 2020. I get in a forum and you know, I didn't know how to pay my YPO dues. Like I had to put them on the credit card because I couldn't afford the dues. The dues are expensive, right? And then get those people around me that have been through this kind of thing and been through other entrepreneurs. And like, that was game changer for me personally.
Yeah, they taught
you
a lot. And
just listening to those guys that have been through, a lot of them have been through exits or been through different stages in their, where they're doing really well and then all of a sudden they're doing really bad. Like it can change quickly, right?
Yep.
So got advice from them, just started looking ahead and everything I came back to just comes back to our people. Like I think it comes from my time with my dad, like, you know, thinking about the legacy he built and our family legacy in the business. And like, what do I want my legacy to be? And I don't want it to be that I built a company, sold it and to private equity and made a lot of money. Like that doesn't, that's not enough. So we kept exploring, and I think you and I were talking, and we explored. I've had different people tell me about ESOPs and what that means for construction companies. And we started talking about that a year ago?
Yep.
Last summer. And it's just, I mean, it took a long time, took a lot of hard work, but obviously we announced a couple of weeks ago that we are officially an employee-owned company, and 30% of the business is owned by the employees now, and we're going to step it up to 100% over the next couple of, you know, as soon as we can in the future. And
yep.
I think that's the best strategy we have for growing and maintaining and building this business and having a continuity of leadership and taking care of our people to help build it, right? They all get to benefit now in the upside, which is
yeah. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover ahead of us as far as really helping people understand what it means to be an ESOP. But you know, really being an ESOP means that the employees that choose to work here have a real opportunity to personally benefit from the growth of the company, and they do that through essentially something that feels like a 401k that you don't have to contribute to, and it's just growing. So as you do things that affect the business, as you help the business to grow, as you help the business become more profitable, every single time you do that, you get a piece of that pie. And I think that, you know, when I first heard the word ESOP, I was like, that just seems like a fancy word, you know, like I'll have to really understand what that means. And so I think that that's probably what's going to be happening over the next year as we really, you know, help people understand, how does that make a difference to you?
Well, and so the company I left before I started Moss Utilities went ESOP 2 months after I left. Mm. And I remember I didn't understand what it was. I thought it was just some gimmick that owner was trying to avoid taxes. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it was just I didn't understand it at all. So I remember dogging on it. Like, so if you don't understand, you don't really, you know, you don't really know what you're talking about. And looking back, I mean, they're probably doing pretty well as an ESOP. And, so, I mean, if you look at the data, employee-owned companies outperform their competitors, hands down. And there's lots of they're tough from an administration standpoint, from a you know management standpoint. But
yeah,
I'm excited about it. And
there's some
the key thing is that like the employees don't pay anything. They don't have to buy in. Mm-hmm. It's just something given to them, right? And
they just have to stay. Yeah, and contribute.
It's a long-term retention tool. It's rewarding the people that are loyal to you, to the company, to and you can build real wealth inside the business.
I think I want to dig a little deeper on what you said a second ago, and I just want to highlight that with the valuation that you saw last year, there are very few people at your age or any age that wouldn't have just been like, okay, give me all the money and let me walk away. Let me go live the rest of my life. So I really want to understand more about this legacy part. Like, a lot of people are totally fine with this legacy of, hey, I built this super successful business. I sold it for a buttload of money. And now I'm, you know, rich AF. And, like, that's my legacy. You know, but, like, you didn't want to – you were given the opportunity to do that. You didn't do that. So, like, is it really – you know, just kind of watching your dad not do that and kind of watching how your dad struggled even though he didn't do that. Like, what does that really mean to you?
Yeah, there were probably times when my dad had an opportunity to, like, sell the business and make some money. But I don't know. Like, something just doesn't resonate with me about that kind of process. Like, I for me to make a bunch of money and then it just – you watch some of these companies that get bought by private equity, get bought by strategics, and they just tear them apart. And, like, their people are gone. And, like, what did you build? What did you leave other than making a lot of money? And I've always thought, do I want to make a lot of money? Absolutely. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to make
everybody
a lot of
does.
Money.
Everybody does. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with wanting to build wealth to have freedom. Like, that's the purpose of I think that we're all looking for is make enough money to, like, where you don't have to worry as much and don't have to have fear. And,
right.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's admirable. You know, as long as you give back and, like, take care of those around you and do it the right way, that's what matters. And I just think that the ESOP provides a way to do all that, where I can still make plenty of money. You know, it's going to be over a longer period of time. I'm still invested with the employees rowing in the same direction. And we still have the leadership team and people here that get rewarded for, like, I wasn't the only one building this thing for the last 9 years. Like, it's been a team effort. And it's going to continue to need new people on the team. And, like, how do we bring in top talent? And I think the ESOP helps that, because if they understand it and we communicate it well, that people here, it's going to take some time too. They're not going to get a statement next month saying they have a lot of money in the company. It takes time, and it takes increasing the valuation of the company through performance. And hopefully it gets everybody just kind of looking around going a little bit more ownership mentality now. Like, hey, that person's not rowing the same direction as us. Hey, why are we spending money on that? That doesn't make sense. Like, we're wasting money here.
Do you feel even more responsibility to make sure the company goes in the right direction now that it is an ESOP? Because it's really kind of before it's like, hey, this thing fails, it's on me. But now it's like, hey, now I've got all of these other employee owners. Like, do you feel even more responsibility to make sure that it ends up being successful?
Absolutely. And that's also the financially, I'm still really invested in it, right? Like, I still own 70% of the business. So it's like, sometimes you see ESOP companies where the owner is in their 60s and they don't have another way to sell the business.
Right.
And an ESOP is just their only way out.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of other examples, they haven't built up a leadership team to really support it once they leave. So then you see the ESOP, the owner gets a bunch of money. Maybe they have a little seller's note or whatever, but they get a lot of money and then they kind of just, the ESOP really struggles or just dissolves because
the leadership
set up for success in the future. So that's just the same deal as selling to private equity and letting it crumble. Like, if you're not going to be thinking about what, like, I want this business to be long-term and be around for a long time. And that doesn't mean, you know, build it up and give it to my kids. Cause you watch that generational transfer is hard. Like, not the kids aren't always set up to be the next generation to run it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that this is the best long-term play where Moss Utilities can be around for a long time. We can keep growing and we can keep impacting the world in the biggest way we can. And
if the company gets passed to the kids, I know all of their personalities. I'm going with Henry's going to be the CEO because I think she's the only, she's got the, like, Harlan's going to be like this super smart. Harlan's like going to Harvard. He's going to be like a, I don't even know. He's going to do something really big though. Like, he's going to do something cool.
Yeah,
but Henry, she's going to come in and be like, all right, y'all,
I'm
this is
boss.
How this is going to go.
Yeah, she's got all Haley in her.
But yeah, she does.
The problem there is that's 20, 25 years away from them being at the age to, so 20, 25 years from now, a lot could change, you know? Like, they're all super young, so.
Right.
Haley and I will figure out how to raise really impactful children and great kids. You know, that's going to be a challenge in its own right, but I didn't think, that's too far out to be planning for them to run the business.
Yeah.
If they want to get in the business one day or get into a different business and be entrepreneurs, great. But the world's changing fast.
The world is changing fast. You're right. I mean, the landscape could look so different in 20 years from now. It really could.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think that we can comprehend how different it can look.
Yeah, maybe there'll be some sixth generation to be in the business, but maybe not, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah, but that's also what I love about construction and what I love about trades is it's like – people are always going to need air conditioning. People are always going to need running water. And it's like how we put – how that work gets done may look very different, but there's always going to be a company doing that work somehow, right?
Yeah.
And don't you think that?
I think so.
I do too. I mean, it may be – I mean, the labor may look different. You know, systems may look very different. But at the end of the day, the services that those companies provide are always going to be necessary. It just may look different how we get the work done. Okay. So, you know, you're a visionary. You have – such big ideas, such big dreams. What's next for you? What's next for, you know, what's next for the business, but what's next for you personally? Next 10 years, what does it look like?
Oh, man. Sometimes it's hard to think about, but I think just continuing to build great businesses. And, you know, we started another business a couple years ago that, you know, you're a partner in, that's Moss Heating and Cooling, and that's really exciting. But I'm not taking my eye off the ball with Moss Utilities. I think there's lots of room to keep growing and to keep adding more services for our clients and get into other types of other types of construction work, and maybe make acquisitions, maybe mm-hmm. go on the offensive and try to grow. And we've got a really young leadership team here who has a constant desire to keep getting better. And you know, we've done really well. We're a great company, but like none of us are satisfied. We're not just sitting here like, well, put our feet up and let's just ride this thing. Like we have a desire to just keep going. And so I want to keep building other businesses. I want to keep building this business. I want to find great people to help me lead it. I love surrounding myself with awesome people and being around positive energy and just good, you know, good moral ethics, good values, people that see the world like I do and want to keep growing. And that gives me energy, is developing people within our companies and getting to watch the people like you, getting to watch Parker, John, Sean, like all these people that before they started working here, they didn't really
have that.
They didn't really have a career. They didn't have any direction. And like to see them just blossom and thrive mm-hmm. and like become who they've become in the last, you know, however long they've been here, Parker being here 9 years, John being here 8, you coming up on 8 or 7, like it's really fun to watch, and it makes it worth some of the people that you know have to kind of pass along the way.
Yeah.
And so that's hard. You got to make a lot of hard decisions. But I mean, this whole thing has been super fun. Like I have fun coming to work. I really do.
Yeah.
I still have to work hard. But I've lived this amazing life because of this business and because of the people that, you know, God's put in my life. And, I don't know. I think the sky's the limit for this company. I like I said in that when we presented the ESOP, I said, this is day one, because I feel like we're starting from zero right now. Like we still have so much room to keep going. And, you know, we celebrated a little bit. I think we had a fun Vegas trip, and mm-hmm. I got to go to Mexico with my family. And then it's like, well, back to work.
Back to work.
Like there's stuff to be done, right?
Yeah.
So, just really excited for the future, and really excited for if people will buy into this ESOP idea with Moss Utilities and buy into what we're doing here, and just get on board. Like it's gonna be a get on the rocket and ride it with us, because it's gonna be. It's going to be fun and exciting. And I think working at a company that's growing, that's going to tackle big things, it's like, it gives a lot of opportunity and
does.
Hey, I don't know what I want to do, but like, let me find a problem to go solve. And,
yes.
And people that do really well here are those kind of people that like, they're okay. Hey, it's not my job description, but I'm going to go tackle that anyway mm-hmm. because I care.
Yep.
And if you can just get that a little bit from everybody, it's amazing what can happen. Like people that just care and care beyond, I'm just gonna show up and get my paycheck and go home. Like that's
yeah,
one
those
way to
people
live
don't
life.
Don't make it here very long. Those people are pretty easy to spot, and they typically weed themselves out pretty quickly, because there's a lot of pressure to be great here, and when you're not great, you kind of just weed yourself out. I mean, that's honestly,
and some people are just gonna be like that, and you have to be okay. Like
you got to be okay with
they're probably not gonna like me, and I'm probably not gonna like them, right?
Yep.
Like it's just not how I'm wired. And not everybody's wired that way, but if you can find people that are wired kind of like that, to kind of this relentless pursuit of something, you know, whatever it is, that want to be great, you know.
Yeah.
I just think life's too short to just be mediocre, to like kind of go through the motions. Like we all got to wake up and realize we get one chance at this.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Well, I know it's been an amazing ride, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on Pressure Tested. Obviously, this podcast means a lot to me, and it was so nice of you to kind of let me just go with this and to support it. So I appreciate that. I think this episode's going to go viral. maybe next time you come on, we'll talk all about, I feel like there's a lot of stuff I didn't get to ask you, like about LinkedIn, but so hopefully you'll come on again, but thanks for being here.
Yeah. Hopefully I won't be the second male guest on, but
you might, but that's going to be good.
I mean, let me ask you real quick before we end, like, what's this podcast mean for, I mean, do you think we do a good job of embracing women leaders? Like the women in our leadership team at our company here are so important to me, and I think they're so valuable to us as a business. Like, do you think we do a good job?
Yeah,
of that?
I think Moss does a better job of, well, I mean, I can always see it. You know, when I first got here, there were four women working for the business. It had about 160 employees at that time. And I remember on Women in Construction Week when we went out to take that picture that we could not fit in the frame. And so I think we do such an amazing job of hiring women here. I don't think we ever look at jobs and say a woman can't do that job. I mean, I know that we have a woman working in the field, putting pipe in the ground. I know that we have accountants that are women, HR people that are women, safety people that are women. We have women project managers. We have a lot of women here.
On the executive team.
We have we have two women on the executive team.
Making big decisions in the business.
Yeah. This is definitely the type of culture that that doesn't care if you're a woman. And that's one of the reasons that I know I've been able to succeed, because I know that I'm like not the stereotypical CFO, like especially when I walk
in
a
room. You had to fight a lot of battles to get to where you're at.
That's why I do the podcast, because I think that I just want to I want women to have a platform that they can come to and listen to that tells them that it's okay to keep working. They don't have to stay at home. They can keep working. That one day they're going to get to the C-suite. And one day they can go and own their own companies. That I just want them to have access to really smart, powerful women that have great stories. And so that's kind of how I choose the guests. You know, I look at somebody's career, or I have lunch with somebody and I'm like, they have something important to say, and they don't have, you know, maybe they don't have a ton of women that they're mentoring, or maybe women that are in their 20s don't have access to these women. I mean, that's really it. They don't have access to these CEOs, these CFOs, you know, so how about start a podcast that tells these stories, that celebrates these women? Because I just think that the more women we can convince that they can get here, I just think we have this huge pool of talent that's coming in, and that, you know, it's just kind of my way to give back to that. So
yeah, and hopefully we're addressing that with like the Moss U program, and with just the bringing in young talent, that we're trying to get women into the construction industry, and it's
You know, I have a real goal. So we're gonna do the Habitat for Humanity. I don't know that I ever talked to you about this, but we're gonna do the Habitat for Humanity. They have a women build house that they build, so they build it all with women. Wow. And we are actually going to do the HVAC for that. But
so are you going to go install some ductwork?
No, but where I'm going with this is I would love for, in a couple years from now, for us to be able to send a female HVAC crew over there. Because like Gray Roberts, my husband, I always have to do that because people don't know who Gray is, but he's worked, you know, as he came up through the field, he's worked with other women that do hands-on HVAC work. So it's just like a dream of mine to have an HVAC technician, to have an HVAC installer, or at least an installer. Like, I think that'd be so cool over there. So hopefully we get to that point.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. It's been great. Thanks.